Good evening. Today is Monday, the 1st of April, 2019. The time is 8 p.m. in Canberra. We will begin the weekly Bangla radio program from Canberra 2XX Community Radio Station. This program is being broadcast by the courtesy of Community Broadcasting Foundation Limited and Bangladesh Australia Association in Canberra. With tonight's program, we would like to give a disclaimer that the topics that were discussed were born out of personal opinion. Tonight's radio program will be presented by the following people.
My name is Adiba.
My name is Adnan.
Hi, my name is Farah.
I'm Ismina.
My name is Sharad.
I'm Sammy.
Welcome back, guys. So it's been a year and a few months since this subset of a larger group have met, and kind of wanted to talk about anything in relation to Bangladesh, being Bengali, growing up in Canberra, growing up in Australia, being born in New Zealand, all that good stuff. Yeah. So has anyone's views kind of changed past year? Anyone want to share anything?
Well, Kim and I, it's been good.
It's been a good year, Sammy, that's good. You know, you went, you kind of, in a way, you're not really following, like, I guess, well, then again, like, do your parents even have those expectations of you? Like, I think the general trend as we've all grown up has sort of been sort of like you graduate from school, you might go to uni, you might study a Brown approved degree, and then you
might.
Go. You study a Brown approved degree, then you go into the workforce, but now you're actually doing your master's, so.
Yeah, and I work at a bar.
Exactly. So. It's really bucking tradition there.
Yeah, but like what's tradition when you live here?
Good question.
I have a question for Sammy. How do people react to you in this community when you tell them you do work at a bar? Are you up front?
I noticed my mom wasn't, not that she was concealing it, but she wasn't outright with it, which I didn't like it. Even people outside the community, I guess it's not a go-to answer that, what are you doing? Oh, I work at a bar. But, I mean, I don't, like, it's, at this stage now, when I first started, I kind of was, I guess, a bit apprehensive, but now I think I'm just, you know, it's, here, a job is a job.
Mm. Would you say it's something you don't advertise, but you're indifferent to telling people about?
No, I don't, I try not to lie about it, even lying through omission of telling, because I feel once I go down that path, I'm going to start being more comfortable lying about it. Mm. So I just try to just be upfront about it.
There is a few, there are a few people in the community that do work in bars, and that's fine. It's a means of income. It's not like, oh,
I just
boy.
Would like to know what would it be like if genders were reversed.
I think it would be more tough. There are some bartenders I work with who are girls who are from the same Indian subcontinent, but they all they don't live at home with their parents.
Mm-hmm. So going back to that question about what is tradition, so if a girl was to take up that role, say within our this Bangladeshi community, that would be going against tradition and questions would be raised, I would have to say.
Well, I need you to clarify, like, what questions are getting raised about your reputation, about what
just, do you, I'm not, just, like, are you drinking, do you endorse drinking, if you know just then you start, your reputation would be important.
Also, it wouldn't just be your reputation, your family,
out of your house late at night.
So then I guess on the flip side, not that it's of the same caliber, but then I'd ask Adiba, who doesn't live at home, do you receive a certain degree of skepticism for living out of home
from
your family or beyond your family, like, not skepticism in the sense, are people just genuinely surprised that you've moved out, which in another culture wouldn't be that surprising, seeing as you're 25 years old.
Yeah, well, thanks for the advertisement on my age, but so basically, like, I don't think I've really gotten anything in person. I don't think my parents necessarily advertise it. I don't necessarily advertise it, and it rarely comes up in conversations. With anyone who does know, it's been close family, friends, parents, and they generally don't really have much of a reaction, but I do feel like if, for example, if I'm with someone who's, say, a bit younger, I feel like there's just this expectation that I need to make sure that I'm being as Bora Apu-like as possible, just to make sure that I'm keeping her parents at ease. But apart from that, I haven't really received anything.
Yeah, despite, you know, wanting to, I guess, fight
certain traditions or, you know, kind of change the meta. We do still feel obligated to kind of fill certain roles, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you feel, like, you know, you feel obligated to be, like, a borapu. You know what I mean? And even with us, like, I guess if we, when we see young kids, we want to be, like, a borobaya in a way. And not, like, impart any, you know, like, bad wisdom. Because I think you can kind of relate to the kids as well growing up. You know, they're going through the same kind of journey that we went through. Just completely different time.
Mm. I think, actually, in retrospect, I feel bad for old generations. Because if anything, the age group, maybe one or two age groups before us, I feel bad for them because most of them are children who were brought up with parents who just moved to this country and weren't assimilating or as well assimilated. Like, I think most of our parents now have been in this... Yeah.
But on the flip side, they came here with... I feel like what people call tradition now has been conditioned by a bunch of people around them as well. So people who came... There are these undisclosed rules that people aren't going to break because...
Even now.
Because there's a precedent of people not breaking them. Whereas a new immigrant who's come with none of this around them is just gonna do what they believe is right rather than being governed by what everyone else is thinking.
But, like, also just the fact that when, like, our parents came here, the community was just smaller.
Yeah.
So, like, just the way you would act. It's just really different.
We're
in
1984.
Yeah, but to be fair, it did have a vibe like that because I do remember apples, like, specific older apples, older than my sister and stuff like that, would tell me. Uncles would see them at college talking to a guy friend, and then she'd go home, and another uncle would call up her dad and be like, why was your daughter with a boy?
I can't say I've ever experienced that, and I'm brave.
I agree, but you're still apprehensive to hang out with guys.
I'm not apprehensive at
all. Well, that's because, like, you're close with your parents, like, your parents are aware that you'd have...
No, I think there's a level of mutual respect that is lacking. Yeah, like, if aunties and uncles respected us, they wouldn't be trying to catch us out in a lie.
They wouldn't be
trying to incriminate us from the get-go. Just like how when we see them out, I don't know, just walking around with a workmate, we're not quick to call them up and be like, hey, who was that? You know what I mean?
But it's also like us, like, our role and their role.
But I think there's also, I can't empathize with that because I'm not a girl. We would never, and I'm sorry that happened. I don't think it really sucks. I feel like since the last time we did this radio program, I'm much more sensitive to the plight of female ethnic people.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's something that I want to say.
Being friends with us wasn't enough, you know?
It's kind of like when you make that realization when you're a guy and you just walk to your car at night and in a parking lot and that doesn't mean anything to you, and then you realize if you're a girl, that can mean everything, and it's kind of like, well, that really sucks. Like, I'll whistle like an idiot when I walk to the car and nothing will happen to me. But the fact that it may just happen to a girl, like, just speaks volumes.
Yeah, even in a place like Canberra, which is, like, you know, very generally very safe.
But it's also people that don't realize it. It can be ignorance. It can just also just... It can be kind of blissful ignorance. It's not sort of like I'm stamping that out because I choose not to believe it. It's just because it hasn't happened to them. So.
Yeah. I definitely do recall lots of conversations we would have before where I would kind of voice these things. And this isn't... Again, like, I understand you just didn't get it. Like, and I remember saying, and you'd be like, well, what's stopping you? Like,
you're telling me to break the status quo.
But there is a lot more at risk.
But that comes, like, a lot of backlash. If it was like, it's great to think that a girl, one of us, can break the status quo, but there are so many considerations behind doing that before even taking that first step towards doing that. Does that make sense?
Literally. Yeah.
There's definitely been girls who have broken the status quo, but the status quo remains quite intact.
Yeah. But also, absolutely. Like, at times like that, they really compensate their image in the community, you know? Like, people talk about them and stuff. If, like, if you want to do what you want to do, like, you're going to have to, like,
break
some points.
I mean, it's just anything. I mean, it's about someone in the community might make reference to, like, a girl's appearance or their weight much more readily than they would ever about a guy.
Yeah, it's not just
about, like, this whole who's she gonna marry thing. It's just, it's purely, like, stripped down. It's just treating them shitter than they would a guy.
Holding them to higher standards, you know, based on their
expectations. And it's perpetuated by other females in this community, which is the worst thing.
Yeah.
It's like why bring other people down who you had the same struggles with.
It gives those ideas.
Females.
Yeah, no.
Yeah,
elder
females. It gives those ideas more credibility.
Because I think, speaking for any of the girls here, I think the great thing about that is how close we've come trying to beat it, trying to beat that kind of status quo. Mm. All of us have definitely banded together and come closer because we do share.
Yeah.
We
support that's actually...
each struggles and yeah. Yeah, support each other against it, which is great.
Yeah, that's great. No, but legit, yeah. The fact that you guys did become closer, because I remember, like, talking to Audio about this, she was like, yeah, like, you know, when you guys were younger, like, you weren't as... I mean, like, maybe you were when you were younger, but then there was a time in the middle when you weren't.
I think we came to a point where we realized that all of our struggles were the same, and that we were just afraid to share our struggles, because we were scared we'd be judged of another.
Because
for the same thing afraid of.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I wanted to say that as well. Like, I think last time, like, I remember last time talking about, yeah, you know, going back to Bangladesh and, like, our different experiences, and, like, most of the girls were like, yeah, you know, we don't like it because I just like, it's just like how we're treated and how people look at us and stuff like that. And I guess like I didn't have, you know, the proper understanding of what it was like for women. But after hearing that story over and over again from several different people, I started to realize that, yeah, you know, it is actually like a troubling thing.
Interestingly enough, I don't blame you.
Can be an obstacle.
You don't have sisters, and I'm
not any sisters.
Whereas my brother never noticed it until one day he said, "Let's go," and he was like, "Why is everyone looking at us?" And it's not like I'm special. It was just simply because
he felt it. Even then, for myself, when I tell like even my dad, I'm like, "This is so weird. Why is everyone looking at us?" He's just like, "It's in your head."
There is definitely a level.
Yeah, and there is like it's like you're thinking too much, or like that's just what people do here.
I don't like.
Coming back from Bangladesh recently, I think they've definitely changed a lot.
That's the other thing I was going to say, yeah.
Especially if you're in Dhaka, it's not uncommon to see girls out and whatnot or dressed a certain way. Absolutely not. There's so much freedom there.
That happening is also, it's not an indictment on the country though. It's just an indictment of, and like, yeah, there's a culture of it, but that culture is promoted by just sick individuals.
Mm.
It's not, and so the issue I have is that when you condemn Bangladesh to just that, is that you're just defining Bangladesh by just that. And there's so much, there's the actual land.
Yeah.
There's the history. Like Dhaka is one of the oldest cities in the world.
Yeah. No,
I had this conversation with Farah before and she didn't believe
I believed you.
No, but it really is one of the oldest cities in the world. It's because we have a notion of Bangladesh in our head from 71 when
there See, that's the other side of it. Like it was. This is what I was gonna say. It was a lot more common before. But I honestly think now, as Adnan said, it's a lot more progressive. You know, yeah, girls walk the streets. You know, they hang out with guys. You know, they don't cover their heads.
There's smoking areas for guys and girls to hang out in.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
like,
and
I was almost kind of shocked. I was like, wow, this is so not what I expected.
It was funny though. Like a lot of like one thing I realized is like girls in Bangladesh and girls here. Like sometimes it seems like we have to follow more traditional.
Girls are a lot more progressive. I would say in Bangladesh.
I honestly think Canberra is a vacuum.
I think
Canberra is a vacuum in a much wider sense than just the Bangladesh community. Like you go outside of just the Bangladeshi community and there are people and I love Canberra, but there are people I feel as though are just unaware that there is a world outside Canberra.
Very true. I think I said it the other day, like Canberra's very narrow minded.
It's just a vortex.
What I will say though, regarding the Bengali girls and them not caring about that stuff, it is simply that they don't care because they've grown up with that culture, so they see past it as well. Whereas when we go there, it is a culture shock for us and it is hard for us to deal with.
Mm.
So like they can go past it because they're just so used to it happening, just like, you know.
Well, that also depends on your like readiness to accept other cultures different to your own, and being more open to adapt to your surroundings.
The other thing I was going to say is I do agree with Sami that whenever I say whatever I say about Bangladesh, it's never about the country, the culture, the people, the food. Well, it is about the mindset. It's always been about the mindset. I think there's definitely a few things at the root of the reason why I have an issue with bits of Bangladesh. That would probably be, for a country that's so patriotic, it can quite often be quite selfish. I mean, that's displayed in its corruption problems. The fact that no one seems to care for, like, you know, the environment.
No, but I think the corruption issue is born more out of, desperation. Like for a lot of people, I mean, that came to be politicians. So, yeah, a lot of people, like, from what I've seen, like, a lot of people, you know, had it in their family, you know what I mean? But then other people, you know, came from more modern.
And I think the corruption is related to how they feel about the country. I think what Sharid said, that it's as shit as it is to probably rise in politics in Bangladesh, it's something as simple as, like, I'll be... I'll be granted this position if I can secure so many, if I can swing so many votes to one agenda. And that's literally how corruption is just born in politics, that I'm just going to influence a result so I can get ahead.
I'm thinking more of the money side of things, taking more than, you know, you actually deserve, right? I guess that relates more to, like, the police force and, like, those on the streets, because they don't get paid enough. They don't get paid nearly enough, so they have to take bribes to kind of supplement their income.
I think it definitely started that way, and now it's just so integrated that it's an economy of its own.
It's just like the norm.
Yeah, like I remember when we were in Bangladesh, my dad had to pay bribes to the guy who was fixing our fan, and they were like, "Well, I can get in next Tuesday, or I can get in tomorrow. It's up to you."
He's the guy fixing a fan. He doesn't get paid enough.
Yeah,
and it happens everywhere. My cousin, yeah. I went. I had my cousin's wedding, so they brought her in like a nice like cart, essentially like a cart. They pulled her in, and then they wouldn't open the gate, and they were like, "Bokshish." Bokshish is a thing, right? Bokshish is a thing
throughout the Middle East and the subcontinent.
Yeah.
So I think in that regard, it's bokshish, not necessarily corruption. It's that bokshish, that idea that
bokshish,
like,
is a culture.
And I saw a lot of that this time.
I will also say though that Bangladesh has changed a lot. Like, I think if anything, there was a time when Bangladesh was more progressive, and slowly, dare I say, it got slowly more and more religious and a little bit more.
I would agree with that. Based on what my parents have told me, their stories. Yeah, there was a time when it was like very like everything was much more open. Everyone was much more open.
I yearn for the Bangladesh my parents grew up in.
Same. Also because, you know, like, the place was just much more clean,
untouched.
Yeah, like, there weren't apartments. Apparently there weren't as many apartments. Like, you could.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah. Oh, tell me, there'd be like there's like three houses and all the like it was just houses. Like, it would look like Canberra. It was green. There was roads.
I guess to support the growing population, it's a need.
I wonder why the population is rapidly growing now. What caused the population to rapidly grow?
Well, from what I've read, is like the lack of, like, I guess, education, you know, surrounding, you know, protection and
contraception.
I mean, especially in rural parts, more so in rural parts. But, you know, but then a lot of people migrated from the rural parts into the, you know, the cities, the major cities, just for economic reasons.
For a better life,
Also, like, sickness and things like that, because people would often lose children.
If you think of it from an economic perspective, you want some of them to survive.
You want more of them to survive, so you have more kids.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah, and that's what it is. There weren't as many medical advances and things like that, and it was quite common. Yeah,
and like, even now, people like lower income people can't really afford that, so it makes sense. They have to be kids.
Yeah. But would you say that, because you said that Bangladesh was less religious and then it became more religious
as a but I think
it's gone down now.
Yeah, I think it's gone down more so now. There was a time when there was like a rise of a particular political party. Do you remember Jamaat Islamiyah? That was like a very right wing party, very conservative, and like very Islamic. And they even, like, in their ranks they had like razakas, like traders. You know what I mean? And a lot of them were hanged.
Yeah.
In like 2008, 2009 around then.
I think that was more about.
That was more about the war, definitely about the war crimes. Not the party. But it was like hitting two birds with one stone, because by taking them out, you could take the party out, and that's what happened. The party kind of dissolved into, you know, nothing really.
Question: has anyone heard about recently how they're trying to move Bangladesh schools, public schools, private schools, to having 5 rakat prayer every day? Doesn't matter if you're a public school, doesn't matter if you're a private school.
I haven't heard that.
They want 5 rakat. Or I think they were rallying for it.
Is our government secular?
Yeah. They claim to be. No, yeah. They are. They are, like, I guess, like, on paper, you know, on paper. But Islam influences a lot of, like, a lot of their laws. Because, I mean, like, you know, everyone in the parliament, like, most of them would be Muslim. You know?
Sometimes I wonder, because I'm not in the Bangladeshi space, I'm literally not there, I wonder if the culture is slowly deviating away from what it is because of its slow adaptation towards Islam. Because I know that the culture is really rich and vibrant.
What's the slow adaptation?
Give me
a country that adapts well to Islam.
Pakistan. If you compare Bangladesh to Pakistan and you think in terms of how Islam influences the culture,
Malaysia,
you would say Bangladesh would be on the lower spectrum of Islam.
Also with Malaysia.
Clarify that to me.
Yeah.
Like, in that, okay, think of it this way. Bangladesh had a very strong culture, right? And I guess so did Pakistan, but after a while you can slowly see it going away and moving towards more of a Islamic culture that you would see in Afghanistan.
Or adopting more Islamic influence.
Yeah, like moving away. Like maybe some of their traditional wedding ceremonies and stuff maybe slowly changed.
Whereas in Bangladesh, the wedding ceremonies are still as big and
vibrant.
Celebratory. So Bangladesh, in a way, I've had people tell me, like my cousin that's moved from Bangladesh, I don't know, a couple, like maybe 10 years ago now, saying that Bangladesh, I didn't learn anything about religion. Religion wasn't expected. It was kind of just something that was there.
Your family taught you more, or...
Like, no, but just being in a different country and being away from all that, because I think culture is valued a lot more in certain areas of Bangladesh, and it's focused on a lot
more. Tribe?
I don't know if it's tribes. Like, even in, like, major cities, like, the focus is on being forward and being westernized and all that kind of stuff, and the more westernized you are, the more, I don't know, like...
The better you are?
In a sense, yeah, or like superior. Whereas
that's true. Like a lot of upper class people have a lot of like British influences in their lives.
Yes, absolutely.
Or like, you know, join like
and
British
I think
clubs
religion
and
is
like
definitely
that.
Something that's like left in the on the side.
I think that's how it is like amongst them.
So then does anyone have an opinion of having the 5 rakat prayer?
I'm not invested enough to have to go one way or the other. I would say that if you're not of Islamic faith, then it really shouldn't be enforced on you.
I do, in that regard, if someone was
Hindu in the
school. If you are also of Islamic faith, it shouldn't be enforced.
I have one opinion, practicality.
To stop the classes. Yeah.
And to have that many children in a school in Bangladesh with there's so many things, and I'm sure they don't have the facilities for that many kids to do wudu every... three, four
hours. I mean, there are, if your parents or your family is Islamic, there are Islamic schools.
Yeah, if you were to formulate a policy around it, you know, would definitely keep it out of public schools. You know what I mean? Well, definitely out of public schools, because you can't monitor it. Like, Sammy said, yes, I made a good point, it shouldn't be enforced upon those that don't believe, but how can you monitor something like that in a school setting, you know what
That's
I mean?
True.
Like, on a day-to-day basis.
Starting this 5 rakat thing, if it was for kids who want to do it, 100%. Again, in a practicality basis, forcing that many kids to pray, you're just going to make the day go longer. You're going to waste resources because some of these kids probably won't take it seriously.
Yeah.
And you're eating into their precious education time. That could be working towards building up human capital.
I guess in that regard, someone could say that, like, focusing on religion is precious time as well. That could be that argument.
That's true.
That is a good argument.
Yeah,
but
sometimes
the
government can't dictate.
Yeah, the government can't.
Yeah. I do also feel like, to some degree, forcing people towards a religion is the best way to force people away.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I know we've seen that.
Absolutely.
We've seen that in our own community.
Yeah. And like, in our own community. Like, spirituality isn't something you can shove into someone's face.
Yeah.
They have to find it.
Yeah, to find it. But humans are spiritual, that's the thing. But they will find it in their own way.
I mean, my understanding of Islam is that there's so many facets to it. I mean, you can call yourself just for having Muslim heritage, you can call yourself a Muslim, and you know, you can still, it's not even about, there's a thing about being a good person and all of that, but you can just simply be a Muslim in name. It's not, you know, it's not something.
Yeah.
Would you say that something is every religion? I don't know much.
No, 100%.
But I feel it's more pronounced when you're living in the West as a Jew or as a Muslim.
Yeah.
For people who are local to that country, it's so somewhat exotic to them. It's like, it's just not something that they're used to. Like, you still tell people that, you know, you're of Islamic heritage. They're not surprised, but it's just not something that they hear.
Yeah. Do you think also that it's not just that it's exotic, but also that we ourselves have sort of become like a little bit of a race? Like, just like how Jewish people, like, I know so many
definitely,
people,
and that's because of the media. Largely because of the media and how they're portrayed in it. Yeah.
If you consider how many Muslims are in the world, every fifth person you're going to meet is going to be a Muslim. I think we've covered a lot of topics. I think at the time we should acknowledge the events that have happened in Christchurch.
It is close to home. I think that's a big factor, the fact that it's like literally right next to door to us in a way. In New Zealand, considering...
And it was perpetrated by an Australian.
I guess we're all familiar with the Friday prayer, and we're all... And because it happens...
We've grown up with it.
Yeah.
Essentially. Like,
the place people go to feel safe.
It was probably, like, the moment of their week or whatever of their day that they're at the at their most peaceful time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And would ideally want to feel more, like, the most secure as well in that peaceful
and
kind
it was,
of place.
And the perpetrator was Australian.
I think what's really also kind of interesting is our experience with racism and just how, like, 4 or 5 years has caused such a big jump. Like, I always remember the CIC being trashed. Or
100%.
And then from going from that being the norm to suddenly this, it's like, whoa, like, when did we make that shift?
That lead.
But in saying that, the solidarity that even the Canberra community has shown towards mosques, towards the CIC, towards the Ngarlan Mosque has been overwhelming.
So beautiful to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Like, people dropping off flowers the day of, people coming and asking for forgiveness. Like, apologising on behalf of the Australian perpetrator for what they've done to the Muslim community.
Again. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's global. It's not just, you know, in New Zealand, in Australia. It's, like, global. Every single place I've seen in a Turkish football stadium, they all did, like, a shezza, apparently, according, you know, like, the Islamic frustration.
And then
in Sweden, they all formed a ring around a mosque. It's global. Like, the impact has been quite global, which is really, really good to see. And I think...
In dark times like this, there's always, like, a very profound light that comes through, right? That's the thing. Like, and that's when, like, you know, it's in times like this, like, although something really bad happened, a lot of good things come out.
You know what
I mean? Everyday life, you know, is pretty, like, normal. You know, you're just going about doing your thing. Nothing's really happening. You're not, maybe not experiencing good or bad. But when the bad comes, the good comes with it, too, you know? And that's always good to see. And it shows that, you know, even though there are jokes like that out there, and there are, like, 10 times more
the
amount of people
that
are ready to stand up.
We have now reached the end of our program. We wanted to express our sincerest condolences and deepest sorrow for the sudden death of one of Bangladesh's most senior and renowned singers, Shahnaz Rahmatullah. She died on the 23rd of March 2019 in Bangladesh. Bangla Radio will pay a tribute to her in a future program. We hope that you've enjoyed tonight's program. We invite you to send your opinions of Bangla Radio Canberra to the following email, bangaradio@gmail.com. You are invited to follow Bangla Radio on Twitter and Facebook. If you join our Bangla Radio Facebook group, we will send you our weekly program description. The next Bangla Radio program will be broadcasted next Monday at 8 p.m. We welcome you to join us. Wherever you are, we hope that you stay well, in peace and happiness. Good night. I'm going to go to the next slide.